The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's flagship PlayStation show. I'm your host, Max Scoville. This is episode 797 of this very long-running show. I'm joined today by Jada Griffin.
That's 796 episodes too many, Max.
Hey, man, that wasn't my idea. And joining us remotely, Colin, Colin Stevens. How's it going, man?
I don't know how to respond to that. I don't think anyone's ever actually called me Colin before.
No, Colin.
Like, oh, call in.
Calling in.
Call in.
Colin
is calling
like
in.
A colon. That's like.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that misspell cologne, colon, and they're like, I love the smell of my partner's colon.
Really off to a good start with this episode. Going great here. Going real good. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Actually, just fun fact, me, whenever I pick up a call in from a restaurant, it genuinely is a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Even if I'm picking up an online order, I'll be like, oh, I had an online order for call in, and they'll be like,
yeah.
What?
I knew a guy named Void who couldn't write checks. They would always get Anyway, we're going to get into some PlayStation stuff. There was that big, huge Final Fantasy 16 State of Play last week, which, of course, got announced literally minutes after we finished recording a big episode being like, what should we talk about? Dreams has announced it is sort of ending its live service support type thing, which is, well, I guess kind of a requiem for a dream there. We want to talk about some other bizarre PlayStation products that maybe didn't really take off, or maybe they did, but we don't talk about them. And then some stuff is going to be leaving PlayStation Plus. But first, one of the biggest things going on right now is Dead Island 2 reviews are up. This is a game that we've been talking about for almost literally a decade, I think. Maybe literally a decade. I can't even remember. I'm losing track. But
yeah, sounds right. Let's call it an even decade.
Let's call it a decade. The first Dead Island came out, what, 2011? It was kind of came out of left field. It had this amazing trailer that set up this incredible cinematic experience. And then it proceeded to be a pretty fun four-player co-op RPG where you hit zombies in the face with an oar or maybe an electrified machete, that kind of thing.
And you got to get that champagne.
You got to get, yeah.
Champagne. That was one of the, like, the most memorable thing was that there was like side quests where you, like, there was this NPC was like, champagne.
I can't remember just 10 days ago, let alone 10 years ago, but I'll take your word for it. But I don't know. Dead Island 2, it got, I played a version of this at PAX 2014, and it's very weird to sort of be sitting around and waiting for something like this to happen to finally come out. And I feel like a lot of the times we hear about games that have this much time spent in the oven, the end result is either sort of a just unmitigated disaster out the gate, like something like, I don't know, Duke Nukem Forever, which was, I think, in development for like 12 or 13 years. Or, Cyberpunk 2077, which admittedly should have been in development a little bit longer. But Dead Island 2 is getting squarely just good reviews. Not great, just good. 7 out of 10. It is like across the board, 7s and 8s. Some people love it. You know, a few people are a little more sour on it, but it's like 75% on Metacritic for both Xbox and PlayStation, 73 on PC. I feel like that's pretty good, you know?
I mean, I don't know if they could have hoped for better. Like at this point, like coming out and getting a 7 out of 10, like after 10 years of development, and like, okay, that's solid. That is a good enough score where some people will roll the dice and pick it up and play it. You know, those are the people that are not already sold on it, obviously. Mm-hmm. There are some people who have been waiting for this game for 10 years. But like, this, I think it's good enough to where when it starts seeing maybe some sales, it's like it's going to, the player base will really explode and such.
Yeah, I think when this is on a up for discount or clearance or whatever, when Black Friday rolls around, I think a lot of people are going to jump on this. I mean, it's weird because in the time since it was first announced, we've gotten Dying Light 1 and 2 from Techland, who made the original game. And this is from, I think, what, Dambuster Studios? And a bunch of different studios have worked on this. But it's weird because I've played a little bit, messed around with it, and it feels like it's not leaps and bounds a huge improvement over the original. It's very familiar. It feels, I'd say, more stable, more solid. It's pretty gorgeous. Looks okay. Mm-hmm. The writing is extremely stupid. Doesn't take itself seriously. The weird thing, though, is that like this is a primarily melee-centric game. I think there's guns and stuff later on. I didn't get to that.
Usually that's like the tail end of the Dead Islands.
Yeah, but it's funny that like this is set in Los Angeles in America, a place that is known for its affinity for firearms. You don't get a gun pretty easily. You're running around with a lot of like blunt objects and whacking people in the face with it. Meanwhile, it's also LA, which is known for cars, and there are cars everywhere, but you can't drive them. So you're just kind of like running and jumping. And
it's almost like, why did we choose LA?
It's an odd choice. Yeah. And I'm honestly trying to figure out. I gotta say it's got the popularity of GTA, maybe. I don't know. It's a decent enough setting, whatever. Hell A. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's funny because I'm not gonna keep going with it. I think like it's very much a junk food game, but
it's a good filler. It's a good filler, but like it's very hard to come out in a year like this year with a game that is kind of filler. Like, yes, we have a lull right now, so it's coming out at a decent time before Star Wars and Zelda and Final Fantasy drop, but it's kind of like, I could use this time, I could either invest this time into a new game like this, or I could knock something off my backlog.
Yep.
And so it's kind of a hard pitch. And we have Horizon DLC that drops, tomorrow?
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons to play other stuff than this game, but if you really, if you got three friends you want to get together with and have a good weekend and mess around and
hit, I think it's great for that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, and I'm honestly, I'm happy to see that I don't know if it stuck the landing, but it passed, C's get degrees, as they put it, this reminds me of staying up all night trying to finish a term paper and having a complete nervous breakdown over it. And then just being like, you know what, let's just ship it. Just get out of the way. And, they worked, obviously they didn't phone it in. Like
this is obviously footage from our review. I saw like the mech bodies and stuff. I was like, oh, that looks cool. But then I saw the subtitle at the bottom. It was like, oh, that's Dead Rising. Like, all right, well, there, Colin, did you ever play the Dead Island games?
I never did. I watched the trailer a lot, which to my understanding is not the game.
So far removed. I
classify these games as sort of like a mess around open world game where there's probably not a huge amount of depth. You can have some friends over and just do stupid stuff and have fun.
That's me. There's a lot of things people out of your shots. That's me every time.
there's a lot of things I would sort of put into that like categorization. Like for me, most of the recent Far Cry games are sort of that way too.
Yep.
You're not really there for the story anymore. You're not really there for like super in-depth revolutionary gameplay. You're just there to mess around, have a good time, go all over the place. I agree. I think this is sort of like a bit of a potential filler game for a lot of people, but it's in a tricky spot because there's like, in my opinion, about like four filler games all coming out within the same week. There's this, there's Horizon, which normally I wouldn't call a Horizon game a filler game, but it's DLC. So, it's kind of in that category for me. The Advance Wars remakes, which there's two games in there. Yep. And then also the Final Fantasy Pixel remasters, which there's six games in there. So there's essentially, for me, 10 filler games all coming out at exactly the same time. And so it's like, okay, I can play one of these before Star Wars comes out. And this is unfortunately not going to be the one.
Let's make this clear. We're saying filler games. Like, it's not a knock. It's not a negative. It's more of us saying that it's not the bell of the ball that we're waiting for. It's somebody you dance with while you're waiting for your date in the bathroom or something like that. Like, you just,
this is also coming out in an extremely stacked year. Like, there's so many huge games coming out this year. And there's going to be a lot of stuff like this that gets lost in the shuffle. But I think a lot of people are going to jump on this when it's either on, maybe it'll be on PlayStation Plus or Game Pass or whatever, or on sale somewhere. I think there's something very special about the sort of, the low expectations about a 7 out of 10 game. And you frequently, if you go in being like, eh, it's junk food, you come away feeling relatively happy about it. You know, it's
a
good takeaway there. But
some of my favorite games are sevens.
Yeah. Now, the question is, I could see it maybe doing well in that area. You know, I think that the fact that it is, you know, it is just fine. And it is sort of, technically the sort of, the third Dead Island, there was Riptide, you know, like the and Dead Island got remastered or whatever. Like, it's been kind of around. I wonder if we're going to see a Dead Island 3.
They're going to announce that on Friday.
You think so?
And it'll come out in 2047.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, PS8.
That said, I feel like maybe they do have the formula down. To your point about it being like Far Cry, that is one thing that did kind of stick out to me, is that it's not open world. Like, it's sort of fairly quartered.
It's like hubbed, right?
It's hubbed-ish. There's definitely like, you know, there's some exploration involved, but you're sort of cordoned off into different areas, which does feel kind of dated. It does feel like it's built on an idea from 10 years ago. And it's... you know, again, like, especially compared to something like Dying Light, which is like heavy on parkour, and it's like really, it really kind of pushed what you could do in terms of, you know, traversal. In this case, you're kind of on foot. You do a little bit of climbing, you do a little bit of, you know, exploring, but like, it's pretty, it feels a lot more narrow in that sense. And it's, I don't know, I wonder if like, if they are going to sort of capitalize on this and make this a franchise and really pump more money into it and make a third one. Do they want to sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater, or they want to like kind of just take this and advance it a little bit? You know, remains to be seen. So it's kind of
I think the big selling point for this one, like if it is going, like Colin said, there's a lot of games coming out this week. I think the big selling point for this one is the co-op. It's four player co-op. Like, there's not many of those out there that are new right now. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it's been a slow year for those type of co-op experiences. You know, I'm probably forgetting a big one that I played a bunch of earlier, but
there's an odd thing about that. I think a lot of people have been chasing that ghost of Left 4 Dead, which was like just sort of the definitive go-to four-player co-op experience. And like, you know, there's also people who jumped onto Borderlands. And the big thing that people have always surrounded that game was like, this game is awesome if you do it co-op. You got to do it co-op. Borderlands 2, get together with friends, you know, get a gang together, do that whole thing. But the key thing there is the people who had those experiences, the people who fell in love with Left 4 Dead when it came out, generally speaking, time has passed, and I'm guessing things have probably changed in their life since those games came out. And maybe it's a little bit harder to get three friends together to shoot zombies in the head for 4 hours, you know?
I mean, I have a hard time just getting one person to duo queue in certain games.
Exactly. And like,
it's a lot tougher.
It's also the sort of structure of it. Like, that was that wonderful time where you could just hop in and play like a little, you know, zombie run, and it's sort of compartmentalized. But I feel like now a lot of multiplayer games are very kind of like, they're more kind of casual, show up whenever, kind of hangout centric. Like, maybe you know, squad up with somebody in Warzone or Fortnite or whatever. But like, as far as like, everybody line up at the starting line and then go together, and like, you know, really, I mean, I know that like Back 4 Blood was sort of a letdown for a lot of people who wanted that Left 4 Dead experience. And you know, some of that was, I think, maybe expectation, but also the fact that I did a bunch of stuff with like
the cards. I think it was the card system that really killed it. Like, I liked Back 4 Blood because I like card systems, and because I like the depth and the customization and creativity you can get with those kind of builds and stuff like that. And I know Dead Island does that to a lesser degree here, but that also adds a barrier to entry. Not everybody is a Jada who wants to go in and meticulously plan out their build. They just want to go in and shoot zombies and have a good time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that really hurt Back 4 Blood. Did you get to mess around with the card system at all during your demo time?
Yeah, a little bit. I got a few of them. I hate card systems. I don't know why. It's completely just a UI decision.
Didn't we do a discussion on this around Midnight Suns?
Probably. But they were like spells on a menu. In this case, they could very easily be like nodes on a skill tree.
Yeah.
You kind of select different ones of, but for whatever reason, it's cards instead.
Cards are hot right now.
I don't know. I was getting the hang of it. None of them particularly jumped out as being like a really, you know, mind-blowingly cool or anything, but there are cards in there if you want to screw around and have some
fun. Like that, maybe this is my filler game.
I think this is like there's stuff to do here, you know, like it's not a completely you know, bonehead stupid like just run and gun game. Like it does have some like crunchy RPG stuff in there, and you know, you can get your customized electrocuted machete that has ice powers or whatever. They do a lot with elements in this, which I think is interesting, where it's you know, you're like, you can throw water on the floor and then hit it with a electric machete and then it electrifies the water. It's there's a kind of fun fun element there. You can, you know, leave a trail of gasoline that you can then light on fire, which feels sort of Far Cry adjacent in terms of gameplay, but it's also like that to me, that kind of jumped out as like the most novel addition this brings to the table compared to the original game. Yeah, I don't know, it's there, it's out there, it exists. Around a 30-hour game that I feel like is going to sell like hotcakes when it's eventually $30. So there you go.
$30 for 30 hours sounds like a good deal.
Now, speaking of RPGs and complex stuff like that and monsters much, much more well-dressed than Los Angeles zombies, Final Fantasy 16.
Are they what more well-dressed, the monsters? I mean, Ifrit is kind of like not wearing anything, but Brimstone.
It also depends on which area of LA you go into.
That is true. No. That is true. There are some.
Okay, I stand corrected.
If you go to Venice, they're gonna be very just shorts everywhere. But if you go into like, I don't know, North Hollywood, they're gonna be some pretty fancy zombies.
Fair.
I'm glad I got to ruin that segue for you, Max. Okay. That was totally the goal there.
The point of my story is that in Final Fantasy 16, there are all sorts of incredible looking deities and creatures and monstrosities. And in 16, the summons are called icons.
Icons,
Icons.
Icons.
It's spelled wrong, of course.
Yes, you know.
E-I-K-O-N.
Correct.
Yeah. I wasn't sure it was like Akon. Like
Icon's been a common term for the summons since, gosh, I want to say like 12?
I feel like summons has been a common
term. Like summons is like the more, like, that's the what they're known as, but they started to like classify the summons as actually things. In 10, they were called Aeons. And I forget what they were called in 11, in 12. 13, they were like the, I think, Eidolons, if I remember correctly.
Eidolons, yeah.
Yep.
Why keep the same name for something?
Because they're different iterations, different universes. It's a multiverse. Cactuars, Chocobos, Moogles, those are all the same. Marlboros.
I think, was the first one that sort of messed with it because they were Espers.
Yes, there you go.
So they've been doing this for a long time.
Yep.
All right. Well, it sounds like this case, they've added some sort of gameplay mechanics to this, where it's kind of caught my attention, because I feel like a lot of people, I'm kind of just glancing at FF16. I'm like, okay, it's a big, huge, you know, sprawling RPG. It's Final Fantasy. That comes with a bunch of stuff that's familiar and a bunch of stuff that's totally unfamiliar. And I love how sort of mini game-ish this sounds like. The icons you
how it's different. It changes kind of like the battle style, like when you see the fights when you're controlling Phoenix and they look kind of like Panzer Dragoon, kind of like where you're just kind of like locking on and shooting and dodging and doing all types of cool things in the air as a Phoenix would, I guess, when fighting other giant beasts, whereas when you're playing as Ifrit, it looks like it is like almost like a Street Fighter, like brawler kind of fighting game. And also, I apologize to anybody out there who calls Ifrit. It's pronounced both ways in my head. I'll probably say Ifrit later, but I know they say Ifrit in the trailer, so that's how I'm
pronouncing
it.
As long as you don't say like Shiva or something, I think.
that's pronounced Shiva. But yeah, no, I really like how they're, you know, I'm a little worried by how quick timey it 16 is starting to look. It looks like there's a lot of quick time events, but I think that also goes hand in hand with the new DMC stylized combat, so it does make sense. I just hope it doesn't go overboard with the quick time events, but yes, the summon battles look phenomenal. I cannot wait to control all these different summons. I hope I get to play as like Odin and, you know, just ride around on a horse.
We know how many there
people
are, have they said?
Oh, I think
151.
Yes, 151 different summons. And 140
I cannot
of them
wait
are
to
Knights
fight,
of the Round.
So, yeah, right. Can't wait to fight Snorlax in like a card based literally just a game of poker. That's how different these
card games make me so
yes, that's how they get yes. Yes.
I think this is really cool. I've been sort of thinking a lot about how I love that sort of variety pack WarioWare approach to like game mechanics. You don't see that super often, but it's kind of neat to sort of shake things up as opposed to just either mashing buttons or issuing commands. One thing that jumped out at me is like you have companions in this, but you're not command, they're entirely AI driven, which
correct.
Sort of weird.
It is,
you know, that seems like kind of not.
So yeah. It depends on the execution. It depends on the AI and how the AI is programmed. It's AI week at IGN. So, you know, we got to talk about the AI. It all depends on how the AI is, how they coded that and what systems they have. Like 12 was like, I think the first time where they really took control of the people. Like, you could swap and control them partially or whenever you wanted, but then everybody else was still doing their actions in semi-real time. But they used the awesome Gambit system where you could basically, you were coding your allies to do whatever you want. If somebody's poisoned, cast Poisona. If somebody's unconscious, use a Phoenix Down. Like, it was literally like the Gambit system was literally just a glorified coding system. Very simplified coding, mind you. But I think it's fine if we're doing that, because it's so fast paced in this. I think I would probably get a little lost swapping between three or four characters in a DMC very fast paced type action. Some games have done it and have done like very fast, like Tales of Arise has that very action focused RPG, and you can swap between those four and it works, but your combo lists and your attacks are much more limited to what you can have hot queued or queued up to your button commands, because there's only so many buttons on a controller. Speaking of, during the trailer, we did get a scene where they were going through like the skill tree and showing off the different moves, and I think it may have one of the worst button combinations that I've seen in a game so far. And it's the, if you go through the trailer, I don't remember what minute it's at, but there's a point where they show the taunt ability, which is a very important ability in Final Fantasy. It's not like a Street Fighter taunt, like, come on. It's a it's like a provoke. You're pulling all attention to your character so it comes off of your AI so that they have a chance to heal or do their super moves without interruption or whatever. But the button combination they showed in the trailer is R2 plus the touchpad is what it looked like. Now, I could be wrong and this could change, but I'm just like, am I pulling my right thumb off of the thumbstick to hit the touchpad, or am I moving my left hand over? I guess if your left hand, your left thumb is just used for like commanding, what is it? Torgal. Yeah. If you're just doing that, I guess it's not too bad, but it does seem like a bit of a weird combination. I, for one, am glad I have a DualSense Edge controller, because I will just be remapping the touchpad to one of my back buttons, because that'll be a lot easier for me. But I know not everybody wants to invest $200 for one command in a Final Fantasy game, and nobody should.
Well, let's hope there's some remapping involved, maybe.
There might be. Yeah. The games have gotten better about it.
It does seem like a literal stretch, though, that combo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you feel,
go ahead, Colin.
Well, I was just gonna say, because I mean, like you said, it's got the combat designer from DMC5, and that's one of the best combat systems in a character action game, and I think this game is essentially a character action RPG, which is really exciting to me, because I think I really liked 15 for a lot of what it was, but it was very repetitive, and the action in it was like maybe a bit stilted.
It was a little simplistic. It was a little simplified. Yeah. I think it was because it was meant to be that kind of first Final Fantasy for a whole new generation. So it made sense. Yeah. It was a little simple, but that also did, you know, draw the hate from the longtime veterans. And so this looks like they're trying to kind of overcorrect and go the opposite direction, which is good.
Yeah. But this one, I think it's interesting because they have all of these different rings you can equip from the beginning that are sort of their easy mode. Because it appears that they don't have any difficulty option. They'll just sort of let you add these rings that sort of give you easier ways to play the game. So like it'll give you big windows to dodge things and press a single button, or it'll auto attack for you, stuff like that. And during this whole gameplay presentation, they sort of suggested that they expect most people to use like at least one ring. So in my thought is, it's like, is this game actually like really difficult if you just remove all of that sort of, you know, that help? And if it is, that makes sense, because character action games are like by design pretty tough. DMC games are all pretty hard. Bayonetta games are all pretty hard. And they kind of need to be to really get everything out of those battle systems. So if that's the case, I'm going to try to play this game without any of the assisting rings. And I think it would be really cool to have like a genuinely difficult Final Fantasy game.
It's bizarre, right? Like, it's not, I mean, it's, you know, it's a series that has plenty of challenge, but it's always historically been turn-based, and then to suddenly totally, I mean, if there's a, like, shy of being a full-on rhythm game, well, which they also did. Category, but it is kind of funny to be like, okay, so you like selecting stuff from menus and taking your sweet-ass time? What if you did the opposite of that? What if you had to just hit buttons exactly at the right time? But it's interesting because we have seen this sort of RPGification of every other genre. So to sort of see the actionization of a historically RPG series, like, that's kind of an interesting choice. I love that the rings are kind of the inverse of what is it, the most, the God of War New Game Plus, mm-hmm. makes it so you can just have
the burdens.
There's like a basically hard mode add-ons.
Yep.
You can have like the Spartan armor, which is like, you don't have any stats. You're nothing. You're naked. You're just out in the wild. And it's like, that's...
The way Kratos would have
preferred. I think that's so cool because that lets you kind of customize what kind of a game it is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're playing with no extra bells and whistles, that kind of cuts out some of the RPGification. And it just comes down to like, how well can you hit the buttons when you need to hit the buttons? And in this case, you can also, you know, in FF16, you can put on these simpletons rings that make things much easier to handle and give you, you know, a little bit of a help with the button presses.
There's been a big push in games to have those kind of options lately, to like kind of customize the game to your play style. Mm-hmm. So when I was playing like Forspoken, I was able to turn up damage amplification to me. So that means every enemy was basically breaking my armor and leaving me with one HP. So I had to get real good at dodging, and it was fun for me because I enjoyed that type of challenge. I enjoyed that gameplay of having to like basically be perfect while playing my games. But you know, that's not for everybody. But I'm glad that it's an option that you can kind of like just kind of turn on and off. And I think equipping it, the rings, is a good way to do it. I do worry that having those rings equipped are going to like use like slots. That means like the people who are relying on those won't get to use, like, you won't get to equip, or you can equip these rings so you can dodge easier, but no ribbon. So you're still at the, you know, mercy of status effects. So that's the only thing that's worried about me, but I'm hoping that it's maybe like a separate slot type thing.
I'm not positive on this, but I was looking out for that when I was watching it, and it looked like it was its own sort of separate accessory, sort of
like exclusive lane to those. Okay.
I think so, yeah. So we'll hopefully see, that's the case.
I hope so as well, because it's nice to like give people a good way to kind of like make the game better for them play wise, but it also, it sucks if it is also a handicap to like other things that they might want to equip on their character. Mm-hmm. So
what's your read on this? Did that state of play move the needle for you, or are you kind of undo course? I mean, you're going to play it,
right? I'm going to play it. Yes. Cause I'm Jada. Yes. Yeah. You know what? It did push the needle a little bit forward for me. I was on the fence like about like really being hyped about it. I think I'm much more hyped after this trailer, just seeing a lot more of the different action, a lot of different things. I really liked the combos that they got to show off in this one. Like, we've seen flashy combos and stuff, but this time I actually got to see like, oh, we get bonuses for perfect dodging and criticals and all these types of things. So like a lot of stuff for me to kind of dig into and make the playstyle my own, building up a gauge for like to have a stronger Zantetsuken, which is Odin's like special move. And there's just a whole bunch of different things. Like, you can change, I noticed that you can swap between the different summons, it looked like with L2. So like mid combat, you're changing your elements between the different icons that you've unlocked their abilities for. So Odin, Shiva, Ifrit, Phoenix, Bahamut are all the ones I saw in the trailer.
Colin, what about you? You clearly are a Final Fantasy aficionado. Is this...
Yeah. I've been excited for this game from the announcement. But I'm also like, I'm a little bit of a fanboy. I get excited about any mainline Final Fantasy game. But I go in with a bit of trepidation, because I feel like it's been since maybe 12 that there's been sort of like a universally acclaimed Final Fantasy. There's a lot of things I've liked about the mainline and Shusetsu.
You mispronounced 12 as you mispronounced 13 as 12, Colin.
I know how much you love 13, and there's a lot and to my point, there's a lot in 13 that I really love too.
No,
but I think it's been a long time since Square has sort of had like a home run that everyone agrees is awesome. And I think they really want that out of this, because I think they've given it a huge amount of development time, a huge budget. They said last year, over a year ago at this point, I think, that the game was basically done and they were just polishing and tweaking it, because they want this to be like perfect coming out. And they want Final Fantasy to be like prestigious again. And they have that in 14, but that's an MMO. So it feels like a little bit like locked away. I genuinely think that they're going to hit this one out of the park. Every time I've seen it, it looks better and better, and I've gotten more and more excited. I am honestly a little worried that they maybe showed too much, just as far as like how many summons we've seen. Mm-hmm. But I think they could honestly be hiding away a lot of like sort of, you know, smaller ones. You know, they've shown us all the major summons that everyone knows from Final Fantasy games, but I feel like we could get some of the sort of random little guys, you know. I'm trying to think of like a really like Doom Train or something silly.
Yeah, they could do like Diabolos or whatnot, yeah. Which is another like kind of a one you don't see very much very often. We saw Ramu in the trailer. We could see various like ones that were Aeons in the previous, like Ixion could make a return, but that Ooh. Also falls into the
we got plenty of time to find out.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff.
Yeah, I mean this game is
squeal. Sorry, I'm just gonna say I would squeal if Valley Four returned because I
Valley Four
Valley Four
Valley yeah. Four. I love how you, I love your pronunciation.
How do you say it?
Valifor.
Valifor?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, does anyone ever say it out loud in Final Fantasy?
No, I don't think they ever say Valifor. I don't think they say any of the summons, to be honest, off to my recollection. Somebody in the
comments always one of those funny things about like reading things as a kid is 100%. Like you pronounced it in your head, and I've always called it Valifor.
They need to shout their own names like Pokemon.
Right. They do, 100%. I agree.
Anyway, Final Fantasy 16 is just about 2 months out. I feel like we're probably not going to see anything, any major huge reveals of this scale, but I think it's also, there's enough information out there that people can kind of make up their minds. And
I think, I think we'll get a final launch trailer and that's pretty much it. I think they're going to
probably show the last boss as is customary. And
yes.
Trailers. Now that's a game that is coming out. That's a bright future. We got news this week that Media Molecule was ending sort of live support for Dreams, which is the wonderful game creation suite that they released, which is, you know, won a ton of awards. I'm guessing it sold decently. It was in the works for quite a while. And yeah. I can't help but wonder if this is sort of like I'm torn. Did this do what it set out to do, or was this sort of a failure of a live service model? Because it's I know the community was really expecting a long tail of support, and we saw like a lot of really amazing Dreams out there, and people can still be creating it. There's still going to be plenty for the community to mess with. This is just the end of Media Molecule doing kind of community side stuff. Like we got 4 rounds of the Impy Awards. They had, you know, they put in updates and things like that. So it's kind of bittersweet. But at the same time, I feel like it's kind of in line with the, you know, post-launch support you'd see for something like a Little Big Planet game. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of depressing, especially considering how I don't know how much Sony kind of hyped this thing up over the years. Like this game was first shown off as sort of like a tech demo way back in 2013, sort of showcasing what the PS4 could do. And then it finally released in 2020. I think it got like a trailer in 2015, maybe. But it had like a pretty long road from announcement, reveal to actual launch. And so for the timeline of its actual launch to sort of cutting the cord of full on support being way less than that. That's kind of a bummer. So it seems like a little bit demoralizing.
I mean, it's always sad to see something that's, you know, a live service type game kind of get the cord cut. It sucks. But I mean, there's so much good content in Dreams. There's so much to do. There's so many like fun creations that people are creating. Like, I feel like it did. I think it was a success in that metric for like being out in the world and letting the community just have fun and go crazy, and then giving new content as time went by, and then they celebrated and did awards ceremonies and stuff, because it lasted what, 4 years roughly?
Yeah.
So like I don't know, it's,
we had 4 rounds of Impy Awards. The game launched I think early 2020, so I mean about 3 years, which is
I think there was like a year of like a open beta
right
yes
situation.
Yeah, you're right.
That, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I mean it's funny to think about it, because sort of on the scale of it being a creative toy, I imagine it did what it set out to do. I know it won some like awards from, I don't know, best educational game. It probably got like a BAFTA or something. It, very much like the sort of like, this is cool artsy fartsy tech that you know, even moms and dads who hate video games might give a nod of approval to, like that kind of thing. But as far as being like a legitimate game creation engine, people made cool games in there, but it's also kind of like at a certain point you're like, maybe I should go work in Unreal, you know. Maybe there's really, aside from, I mean, within Dreams it's not a gallery where you can sell your pieces. It's a school hallway where you can hang up your construction paper creations.
I feel
bad saying that, and I think it's really wonderful what Media Molecule did. It's also amazing what the community did, like recreating PT. As far as it being like an actual, you know, creation suite, it falls in this weird kind of gray area where it's like you know, it's not professional grade, you know, game development software. It's a great, you know, introduction.
Yes.
Meanwhile, you've got like the Unreal editor in Fortnite, which is kind of wild that that's in there. And then at the same time, it's also not really a product that can print money. You know,
I'm glad you brought up the Unreal editor in Fortnite, because I think that I don't think that's like literally the cause of Media Molecule being like, all right, we're shutting down. But technology is advancing. We're getting to newer things and better tools than this one that was, you know, these tools were developed, what, 5, 6, 7 years ago? And then the game came out, you know, halfway, like 3 years ago. So like those tools, by the time they launched, were already starting to be outdated to a degree. And now we're seeing new stuff. So like, I honestly can't blame Media Molecule, especially if they're, I doubt they're working on Dreams 2. Hopefully they are. But there's so many new tools that they can kind of put into their next project. And they said, you know, a big cause for them shutting down is because we're going full steam into our new project. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they already were working on that new project during Dreams, like most studios do. Yeah. But
another key thing is the studio co-founder, Mark Healy, left the studio after 17 years, which is, you know, you get a sense that there's kind of a changing of the guard. But I can't help but wondering if this is, you know, if this is the folks upstairs coming down and, you know, rattling some wallets or shaking the couch cushions for spare change or whatever. This is the Dreams by definition is like, It is not selling fish. It is teaching people to fish.
Yes, 100%.
Sort of not really a good business model. And I feel so cynical and like almost like anti-creative for saying that. But
it's true. It's like when you've like once with Dreams, once you've got the what I think it was $30 when I picked it up, like there was never a need for me to spend any more money on that. And if you know, if that game did monopolize all my time and I was like super into it, like a lot of people were, they probably didn't spend any other money on games for other things that are other big Sony franchises.
A lot of bang for your buck, just not for Sony. You know?
Exactly. And so, you know, and that's fine. It's totally okay. Like, you know, I did that when I was playing Final Fantasy 14. That's all I played. I didn't buy any games for like 6 to 8 months because I was totally enraptured by Final Fantasy 14. And that's the same way it is for games like Dreams, where yes, it's kind of teaching a person how to fish instead of, you know, making them come to the market every day and buy a fresh fish.
Yeah, I guess my sort of fear here is that the last Little Big Planet game we saw was Sackboy's Big Adventure, which was decidedly devoid of any creative side stuff. Like, you can't make anything in that game. It's a straightforward
platformer,
which is great. It's cool. Yeah. It's a good use of that. I just hope that, like, this isn't sort of, you know, Sony looking at the numbers and being like, well, Dreams spent this long in development, sold this many units. People are still playing it, but not paying us. Meanwhile, Sackboy's Big Adventure is just like a straightforward thing. I hope that they're not like, do Tearaway 2, but make it less less creative or something. Like, do it, just knock it out, you know?
Yeah. I think the biggest problem with Dreams from the beginning, from even before it came out, has always been it's so hard to market.
It is.
Telling people what it is like, okay, well, what isn't it is almost the quicker way to talk about it. And it's like, Little Big Planet always had a mascot, and Sackboy was immediately like something for people to cling on to. And then at first, especially the first one, that was very much a 2D platformer at its core. You could do a lot with the creation engine and sort of create new things with it. But it was very clear that like, okay, this is a platforming game, even if it's like, you know, super floaty and stuff. It's a platformer game that you can create a lot of stuff in. And that's what really sort of got its hooks into people. And then Little Big Planet 2, they sort of expanded it quite a bit. And let you do a lot more with this creation engine. And then this sort of expanded it basically as far as they could go to let you make anything. And then you get so far away from like the tangibility of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, you don't really have a mascot. You have, you know, imp or whatever, but that it wasn't really like marketable.
No, that's a really good point. Like, that's looking at it sort of that way. I think being able to sort of look at the thing on the box and understand like a more focused goal. I feel like the comparison would be like if Little Big Planet is Lego, then Dreams is like Sculpey. Like, you can you can make anything, but that's also extremely daunting. And that sort of, you know, completely relies on your own creativity. And it's a little bit less like, I don't know. I also can't help but wonder, and this is sort of like evil businessman brain, which isn't very big in my head. I wish I was more reptilian and cold and calculating and all that. But what if Dreams had like sold texture packs or had some kind of like, oh, great news, we've got this license thing is coming so you can drag and drop things in there. Like, it's completely antithetical to like telling people to make up whatever they want, but I, you know, can't help but think that maybe that would have helped keep the lights on a little longer.
Sure. I think, you know, just adding like a shortcut instead of having to model all these characters on your own. Hey, here are the character models for God of War. Here are the character models for Horizon. Here are the character models for Ghost of Tsushima. Like,
that would have been wild.
Yeah. Like, that would have been really cool to kind of do that type of stuff. Like, but also I understand Sony not wanting to just like give away all the keys to the kingdom. You know what I mean? Like, it's so.
Yeah, again, they don't want you to make your own God of War. They want you to buy God of War. Like, it's, it's that simple. So, I don't know. I feel like that's the big discussion is, like, did Media Molecule, did they achieve what they set out to do? Or was that too idealistic? Like, was it a...
I think, you know, obviously us guessing what they were hoping to get out of it is just pure guesswork. But I think one of the things that I think... is almost undeniable as far as success goes for this game is that, like, it had an extremely strong, extremely passionate community.
Yep.
It was probably not as big as they would have liked, but it was people who were making these games day in and day out, making some really good stuff that would show up all over the internet because it was like, holy crap, someone made PT in Dreams. And so I think on that level, I think it was a huge success. And I think if I had to guess, I'd say that that's probably something that's pretty satisfying for the creators.
Yeah, no, that's got to be pretty awesome. I mean, I can't help but imagine that this absolutely, definitely, without question, got some kids on their way to designing games. I mean, they did design games, but in terms of like, oh, this is what I'm going to do when I grow up.
Yep.
Like, I imagine this was, you know, a great baby steps into
very much
Unreal or Unity or whatever like that. So, you know, I'm so glad it exists. It makes me sad to see them kind of dialing back support, but I'm also curious to see what Media Molecule does next. Now, moving on, we've been talking a little bit about sort of some rumored things. There's rumors of like a PlayStation 5 with a removable disk drive, and there's talk of maybe a dedicated cloud handheld, which is
complete. There's a Bop-It coming. Like,
Sony has kind of a track record for trying some pretty crazy stuff. We look at the obvious successes like the PlayStation. Pretty straightforward. It's a console, but there's also a lot of things that happen that come along. Maybe we forget about them. Maybe they're massive flops. Maybe they're successes that we just don't talk about as much. But I figured I could kind of break down 10 pretty weird things that Sony tried over the years that you probably didn't own at home. And Jada, you're going to completely prove me
wrong. I probably own half of these, I'm guessing.
I wish you checked the runner's show. We can do full.
I know. I was off yesterday.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
First things first, I was going sort of digging through the archives. The PlayStation 1 at launch in Japan had a mouse. You could get a PlayStation mouse, which included a mouse pad, which was specifically for playing mostly point and click games.
Yep.
You could obviously play with a controller. This is extremely funny to me because again, it's that wonderful Sony proprietary tech. This plugs into the controller port.
Yep.
This is not for using on your computer. You cannot. I guess you could.
You could. There's adapters nowadays to where you could, but
what's gone wrong in your life that you need a USB to PlayStation adapter to plug in your PlayStation mouse so you can use it with your PC?
So like I had the adapter for a while because I had dance pads for DDR on my PS2, and that worked for it would work for the same way for that. But yeah.
Did you have a PlayStation mouse, though?
I did not have a PlayStation mouse, so we're off to a 01 start for Jada owning things. But like you said, it was a Japan release type thing, so I haven't been to Japan yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those ones I feel like it has such a small install base that it's probably weirdly valuable as a collectible.
I've seen it at like conventions and stuff. I was like, I was like, I could buy this for my collection, but I was like, this has absolutely zero use for me, so I'm not going to spend like the $40 or $50 they wanted for it.
Well, next is one that is, I feel like, very hallowed. Like, I remember seeing this ads for this in the back of magazines as a kid and being like, I can't wait to get one of these, and then never getting it. The Pocket Station. The little tiny, it was a memory card. It was also a PDA, I think. Like, it had a little LCD screen on it.
I remember that one, because wasn't it similar to, like, the Dreamcast memory card kind of type thing? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It came out about 6 months after the VMU did, and it was a huge hit in Japan, apparently. Like, it just sold out immediately. It was a big, huge runaway hit. This was right when people probably, like, cell phones were a reality, but not fully everywhere yet, I don't think. And then they were like, hey, here's this thing that's like a basically next gen Tamagotchi that has mini games, and you can carry your games with you, and you can use like infrared transfers and stuff. So it had a lot of potential, a lot of things it could do. But for whatever reason, the plans to release it in North America and Europe got scrapped sort of last minute. I can't help but feel like maybe Sony sort of looked at the rise and fall of the Dreamcast and the VMU and were just like, let's maybe not do that. Maybe people aren't going to pay extra for a memory card that plays Crash Bandicoot.
I was always frustrated by this because, as we talked before, I'm a very big Final Fantasy fan. And there was integration with the Pocket Station in Final Fantasy VIII, and that was still in the code for the US versions, but obviously we didn't have this Pocket Station thing. So there's an entire minigame that like I couldn't access, and like some part of me as a child was like so frustrated that I couldn't play what was probably a very stupid chocobo hunting minigame that I wouldn't have cared
about.
It
looks
anyway.
It looks so cool though. Like I love the design of this little thing. Mm-hmm. It's so cute. No, here's the thing that really just feels like a deliberate screw you to Western gamers. They made a dedicated Pocket Station Vita app. Like it was basically all the fun of the Pocket Station on your Vita. And then that was only released in Japan too. So thanks a lot, Sony. We still want Pocket Stations. Make a Vita 2 and then make us the Pocket Station app for that.
I want a Pocket Station for my PS5. That's just, I mean, the technology is there now.
So it is funny to think that was Sony's first handheld. We always look at sort of the PSP and the Vita, that kind of stuff. There was another one that came after, sort of with an asterisk, with some caveats. There was the PlayStation 1 LCD screen. Sorry, PS1, not the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. The little baby one.
Yeah, the little one that had, it was like rounded on the edges and little stuff bars, like that. Yeah. I had this one.
You had, of course.
I had this one. This one I had. I had the PS1 with the LCD screen. And I initially bought it for when I was at, like, I used to have to spend time at my grandpa's house, and he didn't have game consoles. So I convinced him to buy me this little PS1 with the LCD screen. So when I was hanging out at grandpa's house, I'd have video games to play, and I would play like Tomb Raider on it, which was terrible on this tiny screen. Because I don't know if you guys remember what Tomb Raider 1 looked like on the PS1 on a TV, but crunching it down to an LCD screen made it even harder to see traps and where to swim underwater. Was a nightmare.
Colin, what's your stance on the LCD screen? I feel like this was one of the most coveted things as a child, just like you need.
Yeah, I would see it in so many print advertisements in game magazines, and I was obsessed. I really wanted it, but I never had a PS1 in the first place. When I got my PS2, it was backwards compatible, and I started playing like every PS1 game from that point on. But, you know, as a kid, you don't have a job. You have to pick and choose. And my older brothers chose the N64. And that's fine. There's some bangers on there.
Never had an LCD screen, though.
Did not. Did not. That one actually would have probably worked even better.
But it did have an expansion pack.
As far as the square nature goes. That's true. But yeah, I always really wanted this thing. And I always was just like, oh, this would be so cool on like long road trips and stuff. Mm-hmm. But no, never got it.
Yeah. So this actually, it's funny you bring up the PS2 because this actually dropped, I think, after or shortly, like the PS1 itself was around the time the PS2 did. And the screen didn't come out until afterwards. That actually came out, I think, in the winter of 2001. So like at that point, most people were probably spending money on a PlayStation 2 because there were amazing games coming out left and right for that.
Yeah, I had my PS2. That's what I was saying. I had my PS2 at home, but I didn't have anything at my grandpa's house. And he lived literally like next door to my high school. I was in high school during this time. So I was like,
hey,
grandpa, you should get to this PS1 cool classic. He was a very cool grandpa. He is a very cool grandpa. Hi, grandpa.
I'm glad he's still around.
Oh,
thanks for watching, grandpa. Now, here's one that a lot of people had. The PS2 iToy was a huge hit. That was a massive success. And it's funny because I feel like everyone gives, you know, like Nintendo credit for introducing motion controls, but this came first. This had this was what I think 2002 or 2003. It was the pack-in game iToy Play was the 18th best-selling game for PS2.
Yep,
which is it sold around something like 4 million units, which is crazy. That's huge. But also considering the sort of massive install base of the PS2 itself, kind of a drop in the bucket, you know. But this is it. It also, there's something I noted about this. It could be used as a regular webcam with computers, which is like, I wish maybe Sony would look at that in regards to their VR headsets. Like maybe a little bit of like playing nice with other hardware might make your products more appealing in the grander scheme of things. Just a thought, just throwing that out there.
Oh, I remember that one hitting the little dudes into the targets.
This is the funny thing about this. I was reading about where it came from, and I think the guy who invented it didn't work at Sony at the time, but he saw a demo of, I think, the PlayStation 2 at an event and was like, Eureka! And then he just got a job there and he was like, check it out. You can make a webcam that controls games. And I'm just like, I want to know the story there. That seems like a very,
that's wild.
That one. Okay, so everyone knows about the iToy. Here's something that came out for the PlayStation 2 that will make your brain hurt.
I'm 2 for 4 right now.
You don't have this one.
Okay.
You don't have this one. If you do, I don't know how to proceed. The Sega Saturn control pad for PlayStation 2. Sega released an official, this is actually isn't Sony officially branded, this was released by Sega, but it's too weird not to put on this list. It was a dedicated Sega Saturn controller that plugged into a PS2. That was it. It's actually subtly different from the regular Sega Saturn controller because it has a select button in addition to a start button. However, as far as PlayStation 2 controllers go, it has the ABC and XYZ buttons, which are, that's a whole thing on its own. And then there's bumpers, but there's only L1 and L2. And then there's no, I guess you could.
Wait, L1 and L2, they're just on one side?
No,
L2 and R2. Okay, I'm just making sure.
It's a left-handed controller.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, that's really cool.
Ned Flanders invented it. No, I guess basically the two of the bumpers would be mapped to two of the face buttons in this case, but it doesn't, it's also missing an entire analog stick. I mean, it doesn't have any analog sticks. It has no, it's missing a directional input. And then, of course, the L3 and R3. No,
I have a feeling this was made specifically for like Virtua Fighter. Like, this is like a virtual, this looks like a Virtua Fighter controller.
For Sega Saturn fans. Just an idea. Just a thought.
All two of them?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's okay. Everyone gives Sega Saturn crap because it face planted colossally in the West, but it was a huge hit in Japan.
Yep. Really a lot of good games. It, so. A lot of good games on the Saturn.
Yeah. Now, moving on, another console generation leap forward. You actually have this one. I wish you'd brought it in. The PlayStation 3 memory card adapter, which
this thing was so handy for me.
These things, these sell for a lot on the secondhand market. It is a little box you can plug your memory card into that has a USB out that you can plug into your PS3 so you can transfer your PS2 saves, assuming you have a backwards compatible PS3, which was two-thirds of the launch editions could do it. in-house, but the other one was emulated.
So yeah, there was a 20 gig and a 60 gig that were both backwards compatible, and then there was a 40 gig that was not backwards compatible.
There's a lot of fine print.
Yes. You had to do a lot of research in the PS3 days.
The funny thing about this is that it works. It's like it's backwards compatible, or this not backwards. This is compatible across the board. It works with all generations of the PS3, even mm-hmm. though if you have PS2 files that you're trying to transfer, like they're not going to play nice with the later versions of the PS3,
nope.
The whole thing. This seems like such a bizarre sort of vestigial, like just an evolutionary concept. This is literally the jump from conventional memory cards to like storing actual files like on
drives. Yeah.
This is great. I love this because I was able to bring all my PS1 save files into my PS3. And then because PlayStation 3 is when they started rolling out all these digital downloads for PS1 games. I was like, cool, I don't have to start over on Final Fantasy 7 or any of my games. Like my tactics file, that was the big one I brought over, is my Final Fantasy tactics file. Did not want to lose that.
Yeah, this one's really funny though, because it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that Sony would dedicate their own hardware manufacturing resources towards. Like, it either seems like the kind of thing that, okay, we'll just, I mean, maybe they would, but I think there were also like third party versions, like the Mad Catz version.
Nyko or PDP. I think one of those companies would have done something like this, but yeah.
That's something we've seen them doing a lot more recently in like the PS4 generation, of basically granting official Sony branded, like, what is it, Hyper-A or whatever? Like they make officially licensed, but not made by Sony.
Yep.
Peripherals and accessories, which is smart, because it makes it someone else's problem unless it screws up and then people are mad at your name being on the box.
Yep.
I had this because I was in that small pool of people who had a 60 gig PS3. And I if I recall correctly, we had 7 PlayStation 2 memory cards. And I remember the day that I spent like plugging each and every one of these in. I had like notes on the back of each one saying like what files were in each one.
You're way more meticulous than I was.
Well, it was because I was so obsessed because I had 2 older brothers and they were constantly like losing things. I was the responsible one, and I'm the youngest one, which is still the case, let's be real. But I remember that day of meticulously like putting each and every one in, getting all of those save files over, and then this paints me in a bad light, but after I got all of that over, I gave my PS2 to like a childhood friend, and I guess it technically wasn't completely mine to give, because I think it was partially me and my brothers, but like one of them was off at college already, one of them never played video games, so I just didn't think about it, and it caused one of the biggest fights I've ever had with my brothers in my entire life. So that memory card adapter is all sort of bundled together in like a very strange like memory of me and my brothers like having a fallout for like a few months. We settled down.
That was
it was tense amazing. For a while there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of baggage attached to that little tiny peripheral.
Buying consoles with siblings and stuff is always when growing up is always a challenge. Like
here's one. This next one, which I think apparently you both have it. The PlayStation 3D gaming monitor.
Yeah. I have 2 of those.
You have what?
I have 2 of them.
Why?
I worked at a GameStop when they came out, and I used them as my PC monitors well.
So these, I desperately wanted one of these so badly. They're so cool. It's actually kind of weird that we don't see more stuff like this, considering that Sony also makes TVs.
Yep.
But this had a thing called SimulView, where you could put on, 2 people could put on pairs of glasses and play.
I should have brought those in. I have 4 of those at home.
God. And you could each see your own screen.
Yeah. I remember
it was like MotorStorm Apocalypse.
Yep.
I think it was bundled with it.
God, it's such a cool idea. I remember just thinking this is the best thing ever. It's so gimmicky. Apparently it's a decent enough display, good monitor, whatever. But like, I love that it also just looks sort of like a giant Vita.
Yep.
It's just got that weird, those weird curves on the side. But
it really does.
Obviously it's, 3D TV didn't quite pan out. But
yeah, it was solid. Like, I used it to watch a couple 3D movies here and there. And then the biggest hiccup for it was there was an issue with the refresh rate. So whenever I was playing stuff like on my PC, using it as a PC monitor, it would randomly flicker because the refresh rate couldn't keep up. So that's how it like would keep up. It would cut to black and then come back up. But the problem is I was playing games like League of Legends where it would always blink right when I was trying to aim a skill shot or dodge a skill shot, and I would die every time. And so I bought an actual monitor after that because I was tired of it.
Yeah, but that refresh issue hit me too.
Yep.
Yeah. I I used it when it first came out because I wanted like a nice like 1080p TV to play my PS3 games on and not have to like share a TV with family members and stuff when I wanted to. And I used it a little bit. I used it a while, but obviously it's a very small monitor. What was it, like 24 inches or something?
Sounds right.
Yeah. And I eventually sort of just used it as like sort of a spare screen to have whenever I needed it in like a pinch.
Yep.
And I probably the last like few years I ever used it, I was back at my parents' house for a little while during the pandemic, and I don't like having a TV in my bedroom because I need to like sort of screen off for a while before I go to bed. But I would sort of keep it there if I was ever like sick and I wanted to like watch stuff in bed. And so I would like lug this thing out of the closet, put it on my bedside table, like connect like my Mac through like an HDMI and would like watch Netflix on it or whatever. And it was like probably the most like sort of jerry-rigged I've ever like been as far as technology goes. But it was useful. I got over a decade of use out of it.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty good investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those strange things. Like Sony made this thing, they made a PlayStation branded TV and then never spoke of it again. It just kind of went the way of 3D TV overall. Now, the PlayStation 1 and the PlayStation 2 both got slim versions. So did the PS4. The PS3 did too, but then it got a super slim version, which is such a funny little machine. And it's like, this was...
It looks so bad.
It was kind of like it was almost as bad as like the Wii Mini, if you remember that one, that was like a little red box.
It only came out in Canada or something.
Yeah, it was so ridiculous. But yeah, this was, this one, I don't know, man.
How many PS3s did you have?
I had two PS3s.
And you didn't have one of these?
I did not buy the Super Slim because my 60 gig worked for a while. Then I bought a Slim when my 60 gig got the good old yellow light of death. And then I made it sit there and I pointed my 60 gig at the Slim while I played it to make it jealous. Waited 6 months out of jealousy, then cleaned it out again because I cleaned it beforehand, and then powered it on, and it's worked ever since. It learned its lesson. So there you go. If something stops working, just, you know, put it, make it stare at something that does work for 6 months.
Colin, what's your experience with this?
I never got it. I think it came out after the PS4, right?
No, it was right before.
I think it was 6 months before. It was like such a weird... That was the weird thing about it.
Yeah. And it was just, you know, it didn't do anything new or special. It was just clearly like a very cheap build for them so they could get as much profit out of each sale as they could, which is what they've always done. That's the whole point of the slim versions of all of these consoles. And oftentimes they come with like a better design. Like the first PS3 Slim looks better than the original PS3 in my mind. This looks worse than both of them.
What's so bad about
it? Well, does the top slide?
Yes, the top slides over.
Do you know how expensive it is for the console to suck the disc in and spit it back out? Like that is the
thing. Not that expensive.
It uses cutting edge technology. Make a little mouth in there that goes num 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 num.
There's a little Kirby in there.
You just slide the door open like you're gonna put soap in the dishwasher. Like plastic tray. I just remember the reviews were like, it's a PS3, but it feels cheap. It's like, okay,
it did feel pretty cheap. I handled so many of these during my time at GameStop, and like also these ones were probably the dirtiest consoles that I got because the opening was the biggest, so more dirt could get in there for people who did not take care of their stuff.
Yeah. Oh man, I don't know. I think it's a little cutie. I think it is funny that it was like that is also a testament to how big the PS3 was at launch and that it had to get a super slim. Wonder if the PS5 is going to get a super duper slim or something in 2031 or whatever. Down the road a little bit. Now we talked about the PlayStation 3 3D gaming monitor, but what about the PlayStation TV, which is in fact not a TV at all, but the bizarre sort of it's a
Vita player.
It's a Vita without a Vita. It's what if you took all of the thrills of gaming on the go and made it a thing you did at home. It was also kind of a set-top box at the time when people were like jumping on Chromecast. Yep. This is such a wonderful idea, and I wish that it had taken off more. You know what? One thing might have actually helped with that. If the memory cards didn't cost half as much as the system itself.
Yeah, that was a killer for it. I still have this hooked up to my main TV right now, like just for whenever I want to play. Like, I don't have to do it anymore because Persona 4 Golden is gotten remastered and stuff. But anytime I want to play Persona 4 Golden from my Vita, this was the way to do it. As well as, you know, now if I ever want to play any Vita games, It's just right there, and you just pop them in.
What's cool is, I mean, this is also sort of evidence that Sony might be crazy enough to make a dedicated cloud remote play handheld, like hearing rumors about. In this case, this would be sort of the inverse of that, where it was a, it had remote play. They were hyping it up. This was back, when did this come out? This was like maybe
2014, 15?
Like that. Pretty, yeah, pretty recently. And it's weirdly, yeah, it's like weirdly, They're not super rare. They sell for more than they did at launch, which is impressive. That's always kind of an odd testament to like how many of them were in the wild and how much in demand they were. I remember getting, I think I might have taken mine at the Goodwill. I got it on like a dirt cheap like flash sale and then didn't bother with a memory card. And then I was like, what am I going to do with this? And then I wish I held onto it. But it's such a cute little thing. Like, it's very funny to see that little tiny doodad there.
I think what I like most about all of these that you've gone over is they're almost all cute little guys, you know? Mm-hmm.
Their design this work is great.
Man, yeah. Somebody made the Walkman and the transistor radio. They know how to make little tiny cute things. Little guys. Little tiny, little slim things. Yeah. Little gizmos. But yeah, I don't know. PlayStation TV. It was also, I remember when that got revealed. I think it was an E3 thing, and they had a big trailer for it. And it was just funny because of sort of everyone just in the immediate circle of, you know, dedicated console gaming people were like, who is this for? Do we need it? Do we want it? Do we like it? We don't know. We're all confused. We're like, what is this? Why is it?
And that is a successful launch.
Yep.
If you confuse half the audience, it's a success.
Now, here's one that's the most recent. The DualShock 4 back button controller attachment, which we've talked about before. It's kind of what got me thinking about this whole list. That, like, just again, the fact that Sony will occasionally be like, they call it the factory. They say, we've got a great idea for a new PlayStation branded thing we want you to make. And the guy at the factory is like, all right, what is it? And it's like, it's two extra buttons. Say again?
With an LCD screen.
A small screen. You plug it into the back of your... I mean, you could just get one of these for like $27. They're still on Amazon. I can't imagine why they aren't flying off the shelves. We totally thought that this was going to be like, oh, this is a sneak preview of what is in store for the PS5 controller. It's going to have more buttons. And then it didn't, unless you bought the DualSense Edge. I guess this is a cheaper solution for if you want more buttons. Yeah, you could map the buttons to the back. You could do whatever you want back there. And it's got a little screen. The screen is what really kind of throws it for a curve.
They should let you play PlayStation Pocket games on it.
I agree.
You're absolutely right. You hold your controller backwards.
I think the screen was important for that because they had to find a way to program the buttons, and that was the putting a little miniature computer in there with a screen, I think, was the easiest route for them to go during that time for some weird reason than having a setting in the PS4 to customize it that read a random accessory in a controller. I don't think that...
I guess it's just odd to see like a thing that doesn't normally have a screen getting an accessory that has a screen on it, with the exception of like the PS1 LCD screen. It just seems odd to have something that's like noticeably more complex attached to something like that. So it's an odd choice. Just $15 a button though. What a deal. What a bargain. So yeah, those are a whole bunch of PlayStation accessories that shows exactly how wackadoo bananas PlayStation is willing to go with its accessories and whatnot.
And we love them the crazier they are. So keep getting crazy, Sony.
Yeah. So let's hope that remote play handheld thing is not real, because it might wind up on this list. Now, moving on, I want to talk a little bit about some of the PlayStation Plus extra / premium games that are, I think, now available for subscribers, because there's some cool ones in there. It's also extremely funny to me because we're in the midst of this whole, you know, we're hearing about all the Microsoft Activision acquisition stuff, and then quietly they just dumped a bunch of Bethesda games on there.
Yeah,
like, all right, I guess you can still keep playing Bethesda.
Doom and
I think it's Doom Eternal, Doom Doom 64,
Doom 2, Doom 3, Doom 64, Doom Eternal, and then we also got Wolfenstein 2, I think Wolfenstein New Blood, if I remember correctly, and then Evil Within, which is Tango, but isn't that like a subsidiary of Bethesda?
Yep, that's Bethesda. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, ZeniMax, that's what it is.
And we mentioned Sackboy: A Big Adventure, the sort of Little Big Planet with that Little Big Planet, and that's on there now, which is cool for PlayStation Plus Extra. I like that game a lot. I had a really good time with that. It's really cute. It's very simple. Paradise Killer, which is a sort of I've been curious about this one. This is one that popped up on list that I didn't. I was like, I'll check it out if it's on subscription service, and now it is a murder mystery set on an island. It's like a first person murder mystery sort of dating sim, I think.
Cool.
Did either of you mess with this one?
I did not. That's different from the Dead by Daylight one, right? Because the Dead by Daylight did that like visual
did
novel
they do a dating
yeah they oh, did yeah. yeah did Dead by Daylight did one as well,
Forgot about that. No, this is a little more.
I think it was like little, Hooked on You or something like
more
that.
Earnest, I think this is a little more actual. You know, it takes itself not seriously, but commits to the bit less of a less of an April Fool's gag. Yeah, I was curious about this one. There's also Bassmaster Fishing. For
Heck yeah! I was just talking about how much I want to go fishing in my games.
Rip and tear until it is done. Wait, wrong game. No.
I mean, you do kind of rip the the fish's insides.
Yeah. When you're dressing them, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Any of these jumping out at you?
I've played most of these. So for me, like, I guess the Sackboy one is the one I kind of skipped over. It was not the, like, oh my goodness, I need to play this on my PS5 when PS5 launched. And then there were so many other things to play. I just never got around to it. So I'm glad it's on the service now. It's a perfect PS Plus service game for me. So yeah, I'm really excited to dive into that one.
Yeah, and then there's Kena: Bridge of Spirits,
which is fantastic. Yeah. I really like that. Nice little indie game. Got some big money support from Sony, but still developed by a small team. Very solid. Got some good. It's gorgeous. The game is gorgeous. It's got a decent storyline. Combat is fun.
I'm excited to jump on this one. I don't know what I was doing when this came out. I don't think I was on the show at that point, but I was like, whatever. Looks cute. I'm not, you know, super pumped on it or anything, but it does look gorgeous. And now I'm like, this is absolutely the kind of thing I'm going to throw on and mess around with. And it doesn't have anyone like ripping the jawbone off of like a demon's head.
This is a perfect game to play with your daughter.
Exactly.
Yes,
you know,
perfect.
She's going to need therapy, but we're hoping to save a little bit of money by not playing Doom Eternal in front of her.
And like, And like the little, I forget what they're called, the little dudes that you rescue and find or whatnot. You get to dress them up in little hats and masks and stuff. It's super adorable.
I love it. I love cute stuff. That's good. But I also love ripping and tearing until it is done. This is Riders Republic.
I forgot about that one.
I think a lot of people did. I feel like just Ubisoft keeps like having almost with these like weird extreme sports games. Like there was Steep, which was like, it's like, oh, it's open world snowboarding or whatever. That sounds awesome. And then it actually was just kind of like,
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what is going on. Like it's been a long time since we've had a extreme sports game like kind of just blow up and be center stage and really just demand attention. And I liked what I played of Riders Republic during like the betas and early access or whatever for it.
It's like Far Cry on a hill.
Yeah, basically. But like you could swap. Like I've seen some really cool like combinations with people like I'm on a bike and then I wingsuit, then I land on my snowboard and then I land on something else and then I jetpack away. Like it's just like you can just combine everything. I think one of the things that kind of turned me off from the beta or the early access start was like it was very. It's very much billed and marketed as this like go anywhere, anytime type thing. And then when I played the early access, it was like, no, but you have to go here and do this right now. And I'm just like, but I don't want to do this. Like, let me just be free. Like you promised me this big open world. Don't tutorialize me until I want to go through the tutorials.
I guess
for
that's
this
the thing that always I feel like comes in with these games is that there was a similar thing I want to say with The Crew, where it's like it's presented as this totally freeform out there approach to a sports game, and then at the last minute someone from the sports side comes in and they're like, no, there has to be more rules. Like, but I want to do crazy freeform stuff. I want to do.
I mean, draft, you get to
half pipe ski.
I mean, you get to like. Yeah. You're skiing as Jeffrey from Toys R Us. Like
another shot.
Let me just have some fun.
I love the idea of it so much. It is funny how many extreme sports games we got in the 90s, and how much we kind of accept that as being like this sort of
90s thing.
Well, it was obviously a 90s thing, but like it because. Video games, they were making a lot of video games in the 90s, and there was a lot of extreme sports stuff. We got a lot of extreme sports video games to the point that I think we were like, this is one of the sort of archetypal video game genres.
Yep.
There will always be snowboarding games. And then all of a sudden, there just weren't, you know?
Yep.
Kind of in the same way that, like, you know,
I think the popularity of Tony Hawk, not just the games, but Tony Hawk as a celebrity, was it's kind of hard to describe to people who didn't live in the 90s, but like Tony Hawk was huge. People were obsessed with Tony Hawk. And then the game shot him into like the stratosphere. That's awesome. I've heard he's just the nicest
dude. He is super nice.
He's great, yeah.
That's the best. So that sort of combination of him being popular, then the game being genuinely amazing, and then them having a string of very, very good Tony Hawk games, I think it led to a lot of competitors and mimics, and I think a lot of people realized, well, we can't make a skateboarding game as good, so what if we tried to make a snowboarding game that's as good? And it sort of kept going from there. And, you know, I think eventually I don't know. I don't think there was any like sort of hard events that sort of caused it to lose popularity. But eventually people were just less
interested.
Oh, no, there was.
Tony Hawk's Project 8. That was what killed.
Well, you had to stand on the board or whatnot. Cool boarders.
That's fair. I guess I'm talking about like extreme sports as a whole, but you're right for sure. As far as the video games are concerned.
Snowboarding games were hot in the 90s and it was all downhill from there.
You ever play Kelly Slater's pro surfing?
I did. Yeah, I did play that. I think there was also like a fun sort of string of like kids movies and stuff in the 90s, especially like Disney Channel original movies that were like very pro extreme sports. Like you had Brink for roller skating.
One of the best Disney movies ever.
I love Brink. And then another great one, Johnny Tsunami.
It was very different.
Johnny Tsunami made people want to surf and snowboard.
Yep.
So it, you got a lot of kids sort of getting
Rocket
into
League.
This stuff.
Rocket League was, or not Rocket League, excuse me, Rocket Power for Nickelodeon was huge. And like that made you want to do all of them,
but also wear pads and helmets because it's important.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's kind of bizarre to think about that. And there's a timeline where we'd get like a Riders Republic every year because extreme sports never went away, but I don't know what happened there. You know, it's bizarre.
I think 90s were the last era that kids went outside frequently. and that's not a knock against Gen Z or anything like that. That's more of a knock against parents not making their kids go outside anymore.
There's too many bees out there.
There's a lot of bees outside.
Aggressive hornets and such. Smog, you know, there's all sorts of turkey vultures. Kids shouldn't go outside ever. It's too they should stay inside and play Riders Republic, available now on PlayStation Plus. I'm glad we got to talk about extreme sports. I think it's important.
Yeah, it's very important
stuff.
Yeah. I want them to make a connectivity to like a Peloton with Riders Republic so you can actually pedal.
That'd be fun.
Because Pelotons haven't killed enough people.
They haven't.
Good God. All right. So, you know, as much as I love talking about games that are coming to PlayStation Plus, there are also a bunch that we are losing. Here is a whole bunch of games that are getting taken off of PlayStation Plus's instant game premium library, whatever it's called, starting on May 16th. Marvel Spider-Man Game of the Year Edition, Marvel Spider-Man.
You haven't played those.
What is wrong?
Please go play those. I don't know how the five people listening to our audience haven't played this game, but it's available. Go play it.
Do it. Flat Out 4, Total Insanity.
I used to love the Flat Out series back on like the PS2 and Xbox. Those were awesome.
Well, it's going to be Flat Out, not on PlayStation Plus, coming May 16th. So get on top of that. Deadlight Director's Cut. I reviewed this a million years ago, the launch version on XBLA, which was not great. And I'm curious if the Director's Cut actually tweaked anything. And I've forgotten how to solve all the puzzles. So maybe I'll go spend 3 hours messing with that. Homefront The Revolution.
That looks okay to not play. I'm going to be honest.
You don't have to play
Homefront. You don't have to play Homefront. The first Homefront was terrible. The second one was marginally better.
Somebody read reviews for it and decided that it shouldn't be on PlayStation Plus.
It was like Sony's like, we need to cull
this can be
the worst.
The PlayStation Minus collection.
Let's cull the week.
Mighty No. 9, that Kickstarter darling. Mm. We're still holding out hope for the version of that game.
I liked that one. It was not a great Mega Man spiritual successor, but I did enjoy my time with it, despite the frustrations.
Mighty No. 9 is like the Is Pepsi Okay of Mega Man games.
Yes.
We have Mega Man.
It was the Pepsi Man.
Red Faction Gorilla Remastered.
Remastered
it.
Oh, that's right, because it takes place on Mars. So that makes sense. Yes. I actually, the Gorilla, the Red Faction games are great. I just remember spending time tunneling through mountains, just like literally just shooting and just building holes into the ground and just building tunnels. It's a lot of fun. There's also, you know, whole FPS or third person action to it,
building
tunnels.
It's the same studio that did Saints Row. They did that right before Saints Row the third. So I feel like
that's what's coming back next. That's what they're working on next.
I'd be into that.
I'd be too. There's a lot.
Mars is so hot right now.
Mars is hot.
Shenmue 3, another Kickstarter darling. There's that. Will it make sense if you played the first two Shenmues? I don't know.
No, it won't. And you probably don't need to play Shenmue.
Okay. This War of Mine, The Little Ones. Do you like it when video games make you cry because they're sad? Well,
that one will make you cry.
Also sad, Metro Last Light Redux and Metro 2033. Redux.
Those are fantastic.
Those are good games.
Very good. If you want to,
you can also shoot stuff.
If you want to, if you want to scavenge for air filters and things to keep yourself alive when you're, on the. I forget the words. It's all chemical.
That's just what I do in LA every day.
There you go.
The thing that made me, I'd never go set foot near that second game. I played a little bit of the first one, but there was a demo they did at E3 where it had a spider running across the player character's
visor.
And I was just like, I'm never playing that game. I don't need that in my life. I don't need fake virtual spiders on the inside of my field of vision. Thank you very much. I'm okay. Kingdom Come Deliverance. Unclear if there's spiders in that one, but there is.
I think there are. It's very, if I remember right, that one's very fantasy kind of RPG-ish. Mm. And that one actually I've heard very good things about that one.
I thought it was realistic.
Is that realistic medieval?
I get this mixed up with Chivalry. It's Kingdom Come Deliverance.
I think I was mixing it up with Divinity Sin.
Yes.
This one I've also heard is still very good.
There might be fantasy things, but you have to look around for them. They're hidden very deeply in there. Probably
there's a dragon somewhere.
Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon, everybody.
If you like turn-based little mini games, like little mini RPGs, it's quaint.
Ooh, I need to jump on this one. Left Alive. This was this one completely came and went.
That one is very good, very cool.
Yeah, so it's Yoji Shinkawa, the Metal Gear character designer, basically doing a front mission-like kind of thing. So it's got stealth, action, and max. I don't know. If you've been missing Metal Gear, that's a thing to check out. Star Ocean First Departure R.
First Star Ocean game. It's a classic.
Balan Wonderworld.
That is one of the worst games that's come out in the last decade, so you can probably skip
that.
That
on the PlayStation Minus collection. Go check that out.
Call that one PlayStation.
I kind of want to just... The donkey video on that one.
It's so bad. That game is so bad.
Resident Evil. What's that about?
I think this is the original remaster, I think, if I remember correctly. It's getting pulled.
Okay.
So if you haven't played Resident Evil 1 and all its remastered glory, now's the time to do it. And you can do it in what's the trophy? It's 6 hours or something like that.
Is this the remake or is this the PS1?
I believe it's the remake. I could be wrong though.
Okay.
The remake is quite good still.
All right. How to Survive Storm Warning Edition. Explanatory.
Yeah.
Pixel piracy. I guess you have to
steal pixels.
I guess you have to pirate that
one. You wouldn't steal a pixel.
Would you?
Download a free game through a subscription service. Well, you can't do that anymore. Last Day of June. Oh my God. If you want to cry some more. Yes.
It's almost time for June.
It's weird. The last day of June will be taken off the middle day of May. So maybe, Virginia.
Wasn't that one a VR game?
I don't think so. I don't know.
I remember seeing stuff on Virginia, but I never got around to that one. So that might be on my list.
Dreamfall Chapters.
Like a point and click kind of adventure novel story based game.
TT Isle of Man, Ride on the Edge 2.
Is that Ride that off to the edge of the cliff, because that one's probably good to go.
It's motorcycle racing, I think.
Maybe.
I think so. Yeah. Anyway, MX versus ATV All Out. One of these days, they're going to declare a winner between the motocross and the ATV. I think it's messed up. They make them compete to be the dirtiest.
We just talked about wanting more extreme sports. This is what we've gotten the most of.
Some ramps. If that sounds undignified and too loud, well, there's also Tour de France 2021.
Go ride some bikes.
Yeah. The original motocross. not really. Slap on that spandex and hit the pedals, whatever they say. Graveyard Keeper. That one's cute. It's a little pixel.
Yeah, a little pixel, I think, action based one.
Hona. That's a beer company.
It's also an island in Hawaii. So if you want to, go and see.
I'm getting this
Hawaii.
Mixed up with Kenna and with Tachia. What is this? Okay.
I've seen this one around. I haven't played this one either. This is one of the few outside
Looks
of my
interesting.
Is it a graphic novel one as well? Or
survival type game, super survival, supernatural elements, buildings to explore. Okay.
All right.
Sure. There it is. Relicta. A lot of games come out. There are so many games. It's hard to keep track of them. Windbound.
Relicta. I hardly know it.
Hey.
Windbound. Pretty cool little adventure. You're on a sailboat with a wind sail and you're exploring the ocean. So if you want something to kind of hold you over while we wait for Wind Waker Remastered to come to the Switch, there you go, Windbound.
There you go. If you're looking forward to Remnant 2, there's also Chronos Before the Ashes, which is a...
Oh, that's getting pulled?
Yeah.
Ah, bummer.
That one's interesting. It's like a totally different... it's in that same universe. It's technically a prequel. It's a totally different gameplay.
Yeah, single player, and then every time you die, your character gets older, and so it's kind of almost like Sifu, but different.
Technically, anytime you do anything, your character in real life gets older.
Yeah.
Anyway,
dying has a very exaggerated effect on that, though.
There's also Pathfinder Kingmaker Definitive Edition.
That's another solid top-down RPG. This is kind of the if you're looking for something that's more methodical, I think Pathologic and other things like that. Solid RPG.
Right. If you like finding paths and making kings, well, get to work. Anyway, on that note, that is all the stuff that is leaving PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium on May 16th. But there's more good stuff on the way.
I'm impressed by you.
What?
We got through that so quick.
We did?
We did.
I don't know. I think we kind of dragged ass a little bit. But anyway, on that note, we are about at time right now. Colin, thank you so much for calling in. I'm sorry I called you a colon at the top of the show. I didn't mean to.
Okay. That was a misunderstanding on my part.
I think you need like a G.I. Joe nickname like Skype.
Skype?
Yeah, because you're, I mean, like.
We just call him Zoom next. Why don't we
just,
do it?
Just call me VMix, baby.
No one knows what VMix is. That's our, I know. That's an in the word house. In the house word. Anyway, yeah, thanks for joining us. Thanks for hopping on, Jada. Thanks for being here and just
always,
you know, owning all those peripherals and playing all those games.
I think I was 6 for 10
yeah.
on the list. I'll take it.
I have to buy you lunch now. We weren't even gambling, but
we weren't.
Anyway, on that note, thank you all for listening. We will be back next week. Maybe I won't. Who knows? But we'll see you then. Beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.